This podcast of NPR's On Point with Tom Ashbrook is a production of WBUR Boston.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The Dubai deal may be the headline of the day, but just the other side of Dubai and Iraq war and Rove and Libby and the president's lousy poll numbers, the sun is coming up on a whole new political day after George Bush and Dick Cheney and the whole gang. And standing front and center in the dawn light of the 2008 battle for the presidency, two remarkable figures. Love them or hate them, Hillary Clinton and John McCain are each one of a kind. The GOP, POW, mega maverick, the Democrat who was first lady, now driving to be first woman president. Up next on Point, it's not too early to imagine Hillary versus McCain 08 and what it tells us about American politics now. Let's get the sound of these two unique individuals in our ear. First, Hillary Clinton this week promoting a bill she's put forward to ban all foreign governments from buying U.S. port operations. She hammered away at an emerging issue for her, White House incompetence.
It is aimed at trying to send a big wake-up call to our own government that we've not done what we need to do on security in our ports and so much else that has basically been neglected since 9/11.
There she is, Hillary the Tough. Let's hear John McCain. Back in November last year, he was on this show, On Point. He was asked by a caller why he didn't accept John Kerry's alleged offer to join the Kerry ticket as vice presidential candidate in 2004. McCain answered by going to his conservative character.
I mean, I am a conservative Republican. I am a conservative Republican. And so for me to then join with a liberal Democrat, which John Kerry is a proud person of that philosophy, it wouldn't have meshed. Finally, could I mention on the Jay Leno show, he asked me about vice president. I said, you know, I spent all those years in a North Vietnamese prison camp, fed scraps, kept in the dark. Why should I do that all over again?
And there they are, Hillary and McCain, maybe the big candidates for 08. Right now, they're the big names. Joining me now from New York is Gary Langer. He's director of polling for ABC News, which this week ran the numbers up, down, and sideways on a 2008 McCain-Clinton showdown. Gary Langer, thanks for being with us. What's the headline? What do the poll numbers show?
Well, Tom, you know, both of these are formidable candidates or potential candidates in 2008. Most Americans have favorable opinions of both Senator Clinton and Senator McCain, but their support profiles are vastly different, and the challenges they would face as candidates really couldn't be more different. Senator Clinton is much stronger in her base than McCain is in his, but McCain far more appealing beyond his base than Senator Clinton is.
So Senator Clinton with deep support in the Democratic Party, John McCain with broad support across boundaries. How does that play out?
Well, it's a challenge for both of them because Senator Clinton's profile is the type that looks like it's well-placed for a primary campaign. 80% of Democrats have a favorable opinion of her. Many of them strongly favorable. So within her base, the folks who vote in primary, she's really quite well placed. In a general election campaign, however, she's much less strong among independents, and particularly so among Republicans. Among liberal Democrats, 86% like Senator Clinton. Among conservative Republicans, 14%. There's nothing there for her across the aisle. So in a general election campaign, when you need to appeal to the center, she's got some real challenges ahead. McCain, as I say, is in the opposite position.
The opposite position, that is, lots of broad support, but a tougher challenge in the primary.
Yeah, exactly. For example, while Clinton's favorables are 80% among Democrats, McCain gets a favorable rating from 64% of Republicans. It's not awful, but it's not way up there where you want it to be unstoppable in a primary. What's fascinating about McCain is that while he gets a 64% favorability from Republicans, he gets 57% favorability from Democrats. Indeed, not only do 7 in 10 conservative Republicans like him, so does 6 in 10 liberal Democrats. So if he were to get his party's nomination, a bigger if, then he's got a lot of cross-border appeal that's essential in a general election campaign.
So
John McCain has to move to the right or be seen that way to win in a primary, and Hillary has to move to the right to win in a general election? Am I reading that right from the polls now?
Yeah, that's right, and that is, to a certain extent, where these candidates come from, but it's also, to a certain extent, representative of American politics. We are somewhat of a center-right country. I mean, for a long while now, conservatives have outnumbered liberals in this country by a substantial margin. About a fifth of the country is made up of liberals, and more like a third or more, maybe 35% are conservatives.
So, and the favorability business, John versus Hillary here, how do they look again?
Yeah, there are other measures you can use. Who would you vote for? Who do you want to see run, et cetera? But favorability, I think, is important to us, particularly at this stage. Look, we're nearly 1,000 days away from the election. There's a lot of time to come and a lot of argumentation to hear about. But favorability is really the most basic level of a public figure or a candidate's acceptability. Do you have a basically favorable or unfavorable opinion of these candidates? It's really the lowest but most important hurdle to get started. 52% of Americans have a favorable opinion of Hillary Clinton overall, but 46% have an unfavorable one. John McCain looks better, 59% favorable. That's his bigger base, and only 29% unfavorable. Even more important, though, I think, is the intensity of these sentiments. And this is perhaps Hillary Clinton's biggest problem. The old right-wing conspiracy, if it ever existed, is still displeased with her for that comment. So a third of Americans, 33%, not only have an unfavorable opinion of her, but feel strongly about it, strongly unfavorable. John McCain's strongly unfavorable number, only 11%, just a third of that. Those people who strongly disapprove of Senator Clinton are the ones who are most apt to get up and vote against her at any opportunity.
So an intense bump in the road out there, a really interesting matchup here. Gary Langer, thanks very much for sharing the poll numbers at this very early date, as you say, almost 1,000 days to go. But what an interesting picture. Thank you for being with us.
You bet, Tom. Thanks.
Gary Langer, Director of Polling for ABC News. I want to turn to Washington now, and Ryan Lizza, senior editor at the New Republic. He's recently written big stories on Hillary Clinton's machine and one on John McCain's presidential ambitions coming out very soon. Ryan Lizza, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Tom.
So, all right, we're going to look at each of these two operations. You've been paying close attention recently. I mean, first of all, the question, are we looking at the right two people here? It's very early. Anything can happen, we know. But is there any argument at this point that these are the big names right now?
I don't think so. You look at all the polls, and these are the dominant candidates in their respective parties. In recent elections, insurgents haven't won, underdog candidates haven't won, and it's very likely that the dominant candidate in each race will win the primary, as depressing as that may be at this early stage. So I think these are the people to focus on.
Ryan, compare their ambitions, compare their organizations for us at this early date.
Well, let me say a little bit about Hillary's organization, which I've spent a lot of time exploring recently. The first thing to say about it is it's very different than her husband's operation, and purposely so. The Hillary people think that Bill Clinton's White House was too leaky. They think that there were too many people that weren't loyalists to the president that sort of came and went in the Clinton years. And she's put together a team of people that have been with her a really long time, a sort of core group of loyalists. And they like the comparison to George W. Bush rather than Bill Clinton.
Sounds like it. Loyal, tight, and not leaky.
Exactly, exactly. In fact, a number of them were, I understand that some of the senior people in the Clinton operation were quite miffed that, in fact, anyone even talked to me for a piece describing the operation.
So, what about the scale of her operation at this point, of her presidential machine?
Right. It's sort of massive and sprawling, and internally they call the whole operation Hillary Land, and Hillary Land has a bunch of nodes. It has the Senate office operation. It has the outside consultants, big-name consulting groups like the Glover Park Group. It has a series of fundraising organizations like HillPAC and Friends of Hillary, which is the Senate campaign operation. So there are a lot of chiefs in the operation, a lot of powerful players,
and a lot of money already in the satchels. We'll look at that. What about on the John McCain side? Is this the maverick running alone? Has he got an operation? What's his ambition and operation look like?
What's most interesting about what McCain's doing right now is trying to take care of the issue that Gary just described to us. That is, shoring up support on the right. He's got the center, and that's probably not going to change. So what he's doing right now is he's sort of scratching off all of the old conservative enemies that he gathered from the 2000 campaign. He reached out, for example, to Jerry Falwell recently, has had an hour and a half interview in his office with Jerry Falwell in his office. He called Jerry Falwell a force of evil in 2000. And other conservatives, you know, starting with the president, George W. Bush, in 2004, he's been sort of making his peace with and trying to get the right to trust him again.
To trust him again. Are they responding to that? He's been pretty tough on the religious right. He's been pretty much unharnessed by the general conservative right. Grover Norquist says no way, no how.
You know, and that's actually the piece I wrote this week was about the relationship with Norquist and McCain. But here's the situation now. McCain may be such a dominant candidate that these conservatives may, in the end, have to at some point make a bet. Do they oppose McCain and try and unseat him and he wins anyway and you know, they have no influence with him? Or do they decide that they need to sort of co-opt him and get him to pay attention to his issues? He may be the nominee anyway, so it's better for them to be inside the tent than outside.
He could be just what the doctor ordered for the Republicans. With George Bush's number so low, he is kind of the anti-Bush, despite his endorsement in 2004, isn't he?
That's true, but a lot of conservatives don't necessarily think the anti-Bush is the right person. They want someone that's like Bush, at least on judges and taxes and the issues that they care deeply about.
We're joined now from Houston, Texas, by David Hill, a Republican pollster, director of Hill Research Consultants, a Texas-based firm that polls for GOP candidates and causes. David Hill, thanks very much for being with us.
Hello, Tom.
And from Los Angeles, California, Flavia Colgan is with us, Democratic political consultant, formerly a senior staffer for Democratic Governor Ed Rendell of Pennsylvania, contributor to Huffington Post, a left-leaning political website. She does analysis on Fox News and MSNBC. Flavia Colgan, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
David Hill, first to you, do you think this is a likely race, the likely race?
It certainly at this point makes sense from a polling standpoint. The only other polling number that might cast doubt on this race is the right direction, wrong track question. We know that depending on how you ask it, at least 60% of Americans say that the country's headed in the wrong direction, off on the wrong track. What that usually indicates is that voters will respond well to kind of fresh new candidates. Sometimes we might think of newcomers. And certainly both of these are established figures on the American political scene. So I wouldn't just yet count out some of the fresh new faces that might be just around the corner on the Democratic side, people like Evan Bayh, or on the Republican side, people like George Allen or Mitt Romney.
Mm-hmm. So there are plenty of other names out there, and the whole chessboard could change a lot before push comes to shove here. But big names up front, Flavia Colgan, you come at this from the Democratic Party side, from the left. Can Hillary win?
Yeah, I think that she's not electable in a general election, and we can get to that, just to put that on the table. And though I agree in terms of her support in the base and the fact that, you know, the Clintons essentially run the Democratic Party and the machine is rather great, one thing that I do notice is, you know, when I go on television and I mention, you know, that I feel that Hillary Clinton has very little room for upward mobility, for instance, something we noticed when your former guest was talking about those polling numbers, and the fact that I really don't think this third way or trying to be a moderate, people believe she's a liberal. And that's a label she's not going to lose. And in the meantime, she is losing a lot of support in the left side of the party, in the progressives, and a lot of people who aren't willing to get out and say it yet because they're afraid of bringing down our candidate. But if enough people do, you know, I wouldn't be surprised that she could even be upset in a primary. That would not shock me, because Democrats do want more than anything to win. And if enough people begin to realize or feel that, you know, they might have Bill Clinton nostalgia, and they may feel that she's one of them and they're part of the club, you know, they're going to be much more concerned with making sure they win and take the White House. And if she's not the person to do it, they'll look at a Warner, they'll look at an Evan Bayh, they'll look at whoever they have to in terms of that electability.
Ryan Lizza, how do you see Hillary Clinton's positioning strategy at this point?
Look, I think Flavia hit the two ways at which Democrats in the primaries are going to go at Hillary, and they're actually sort of opposite strategies. You see people lining up on her left right now, making an ideological challenge to her, people who are angry about her position on the war. Those are people like Feingold, and perhaps if Al Gore gets into the race, he'll challenge her from the left. The other argument that other Democrats are going to make is the electability argument. She is simply unelectable. We can't afford to lose another presidential election. You know, as much as you may love Hillary, you have to send a fresh face in against the Republican candidate. And people like Evan Bayh and the former governor of Virginia, Mark Warner, they're lining up on that side, making the slowly sort of emerging out of their candidacies. You see them making the electability argument. So Hillary has to do two things. She has to, one, prove that she's as ironic as it is, she does have to prove to liberals that, you know, she's one of them. And at the same time, she has to make the case that she really can win this thing. In the polls, you know, the sort of jury's out on that, and the polls don't look that encouraging right now as far as her general election chances.
David
so
Hill,
she's trying to straddle those two arguments.
Yeah, David Hill, look at this from a Republican perspective for a moment. Do you see Hillary has posed with a lot of Republicans? She's co-sponsored legislation with a lot of conservative Republicans. She's carved out a kind of centrist message here very deliberately. From the GOP angle, do you see her in a position where she can reach over, despite the negatives in the polls, and grab away Republican voters? Can a centrist strategy work for her as a magnet to the GOP side?
It just seems doubtful at this point. The one area where she does attract some sympathy in the Republican Party, and I don't want to be too humorous about this, but there are a lot of Republican women that commiserate with her over being married to Bill Clinton and the problems they had in their marriage. And so as such, I do have Republican men sometimes say to me, "Ooh, I'm worried my wife might vote for Hillary." But I think when push comes to shove, that's going to be a very, very difficult sell. Simply feeling sympathetic for someone for the situation they've been in won't translate into giving them the vote for president.
And what about McCain? You've called him a tall tree on a plateau of stumps. But Rudy Giuliani's out there, and George Allen and Mitt Romney, stumps?
Well, certainly they don't have the national presence that John McCain has. I mean, really, there's no one that even comes close. Rudy Giuliani does have it, but I'm not really sure that he's out there on the playing field right now.
Mm-hmm.
He's extremely popular. I know I did a lot of work in Florida last year, and even though he's not from Florida, he probably would have been one of the more popular figures in the state last year when we were doing polling there. But it's not clear to me that he's ready to kind of leave the business world and move back into politics. So setting him aside, really everyone else that's out there, with the possible exception of Newt Gingrich, which is sort of a wild card, really is not that well known by the rank and file all across the country.
Flavia Colgan, look at John McCain for a moment. David Hill points out that the country's going in the wrong direction. Poll numbers are very high right now. Do you see John McCain, with his maverick reputation, as a guy that could speak to just that, be appealing to voters because he's seen as a maverick, a man of his own mind? Could he reverse the wrong direction thing and save the GOP here?
Absolutely. And that's I'll address McCain, and then I want to go back to Hillary, because one of the things that Inside the Beltway, or people, you know, no offense, on shows like this, we get to talking about process, or we talk about five-point plans, or where people voted on the bankruptcy bill,
right,
and thus and such, which is important. But the fact is, you know, I grew up in Pennsylvania, Iowa, and Michigan, and when you travel this country, you know, middle America and regular folks care more about connecting with politicians in a visceral way. Do they have a vision for America? And a vision is not tax cuts or this or a laundry list of issues. It's qualities that they see that transcend that. So the straight talking, that they can feel their authenticity. And when I look into McCain, you know, whether I agree with a lot of his positions or not, first, people mostly have a very positive view of him. With a lot of people, and you see those in the numbers, who don't have a clear view of him, giving him a huge room for improvement on an already positive image. Second, I think he offers a real alternative in people's minds to politics as usual, because he essentially has credibility as an independent voice that takes on the worst of both parties, whether it's on culture, the environment, the war, different angles of that, and frankly takes these things that everyone can agree with. And I think that he'll Republicans and will offer independents and Reagan Democrats, the type of Reagan Democrats that, you know, live in western Pennsylvania and so forth, and offer them a real alternative to not feel guilty for voting for someone who endorsed Bush and yet is not part of the Bush administration. And the critical thing in all this, which is McCain is seen as a straight, blunt, and honest. And that appeals to people in middle America and in the Southwest, as well as the other areas.
Flavia, I want to ask you, you're the Democrat in this conversation. What's the Hillary vision? What is it?
Well, exactly. That is the problem. There is no Hillary vision from what I can tell. I mean, she cannot give a position on the most important issue this nation is facing right now, Iraq. I mean, she's never even, I mean, she doesn't line up anywhere. We don't know, is she upset about her vote? Is she happy about it? I mean, she voted the wrong way on the bankruptcy bill as far as I'm concerned, and most progressives would be concerned. And
this is tightening up bankruptcy laws, yeah.
Yeah, and right. I mean, she essentially voted for a bill that told deadbeat dads that they have to pay multi-billion-dollar corporations before they pay their own children. But that's a whole other show. But the problem with Hillary is that Hillary doesn't offer an alternative. She's playing up the third way her husband did. But unlike when Bill Clinton ran, she's not offering herself as a direct contrast to Bush because of all this having to be in the middle. And Bill Clinton said he was a moderate, but he laid out specifically what he would do differently. And Hillary seems averse to taking strong stance. She seems averse to standing up and putting her neck out, even like a Feingold, who is willing to take the vote on the Patriot Act that could have ended his career.
But talking the third way, talking the centrist way, with an eye toward reaching out to the right, I want to get our callers, the listeners, the voters into this conversation. Kevin's calling from Amherst, Massachusetts. Hi, Kevin, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I suspect that some people may know this. John McCain is really just a stealth ultra-conservative. If voters educate themselves about his background, his record, his activities in Washington, they'll find that he's not, you know, he's got a great PR firm or something that keeps him looking centrist, but when
not a bad personality. Maybe that's what does it for him.
When he says he's a conservative, he means it. He and IRI had a major hand in overthrowing Aristide in Haiti.
Let us look at exactly that. Of course, Kevin, thanks for your call. David Hill, we heard the tape of John McCain from a conversation on our own show saying, look, I'm a conservative. Kevin calls him a stealth candidate here. How does he stack up on the ultra-conservative scale that Kevin wants to put up against him?
Well, John McCain is a conservative, no doubt. But I think what's always been characteristic of him, which causes people to call him a maverick, is he finds those opportunities to sort of break with conservatives in one form or fashion. It may be that he's critical of the religious rights involvement in politics on occasion. It may be that he takes a stance on an issue or two. He's a couple of times worked across party aisle to work with Democrats to cause something that's maybe stymied a Bush initiative. So he finds those opportunities to be distinctive, to be different. I mean, really, from a political consultant's perspective, this is ideal because it adds a touch of authenticity to John McCain that many other candidates don't have. You feel like you are getting the straight talk, and that straight talk is vouched by the fact that sometimes he's willing to part with his own party on a given issue.
For a ban on oil drilling in the Arctic, against a ban on gay marriage, for the September 11th investigation that's been resisted by the White House, for reducing carbon dioxide emissions. On the other hand, he's for a ban on partial birth abortion. He's against U.S. cooperation with the International Criminal Court. He's for the Bush judicial nominees. There's the John McCain formula. Lisa's calling from Des Moines, Iowa. Hi, Lisa, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I wanted to say that I think it's a little premature to say that Hillary is not an electable person before the election even gets going. I used to live in New York when she was running for Senate, and it made a huge difference once her campaign got going and she got her word out there and people started to get on board with her. And I think that she's a very skilled politician and she can really build momentum.
We hear that, Lisa. What does Hillary stand for to you, Lisa?
Well, I'm going to say I'm not a big Hillary lover. I can't speak for her, and I don't know.
Okay, but you think she can
I
do
would
it?
Say that. Well, yeah. I mean, I think that she's got the political skill to be able to maneuver it, and I think that that the talk radio people are the ones that are really setting the theme for her, either that she's really loathed or that she's unelectable. And I think that when you talk to regular people here in Iowa or other places, I think the story is a little bit different. People are a little hesitant to jump to these conclusions.
And open to the idea.
Yeah, I mean, I want to hear what she has to say, and I don't hate her or love her or anything at this point.
Got it. And Iowa matters. Ryan, Lizza, what about the sort of scale, the balance of ambition and operation with Hillary? I mean, you've described a very big operation, a lot of money pulled in already, the Democratic Party even complaining that she's sort of building her own database, building her own operation, leaving the DNC and Howard Dean in the dust. Do you think that that's going to – is that the political skill, the savvy, that may overcome some of the ambiguity as she tries to go this centrist road?
Yeah, and one point that your caller makes is how well she's done in New York. And look, one of the reasons that we don't really know that it's hard for Flavia to sort of point to exactly what Hillary stands for at this point, and hard for a lot of us, is that she's been concentrating on her reelection. She knows that the route to the presidency is for her to have a huge, huge reelection victory.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what she's really had her eye on for the last few years. She's very constituent-based. She's really taking care of local issues in New York.
But she barely has an opponent, right? So that's a foregone conclusion.
And looking, you know, she's been her team has been very politically skilled at making sure she doesn't have opponents or making sure sort of that anyone that gets into the race sort of falls on their face. Look, Chuck Schumer won his reelection with 71% of the vote in New York, so a liberal Democrat can have a huge crushing victory, and she's going to be able to point to some of these upstate areas and say, hey, I won over these white rural voters that everyone says I can't do well with. And, you know, that victory, remember what happened with Bush in 98? He won a huge reelection victory as governor in Texas, and it gave everyone a second look at the guy.
Let's turn to Columbia, Maryland, and Anne. Hi, Anne. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was interested in the Iowa questioner who thought she was electable. I'm a strong Democrat. I'm probably left of Hillary. But I just wonder what makes people think that the strong anti-Clinton sentiment that existed for all of Clinton's era, and it was as much, if not more, directed towards Hillary than it was towards Bill. So what makes us think that in the heartland and all over the country, I think she can get elected in New York, but that she can get elected nationally? I think that loathing is still there.
Let us pick it up, Ann, and thanks for your call. Ryan, Lizza, you've talked with a lot of people, as many as you could anyway, in the tight-lipped Hillary Clinton camp. What do they say to that if you've raised it?
They say, well, a couple of things. One is they know that, you know, 25 to 30% of the country is absolutely not open to voting to Hillary ever. And obviously they're not focusing on those people. But beyond that, they think that by getting away from the character questions and talking more about issues and running against the incompetence, as what they see as the incompetence of the Bush years, and reminding people of the competence of the Clinton years, that they can change enough minds to get over the 50% mark. And look, the country is polarized between the two parties, and they would say that any candidate that any Democratic candidate that reaches a certain threshold has a shot just by the pure nature of how divided the country is. And they also point, as I said before, to New York, where she has done better than one would expect with voters that are stereotypically we think of as hostile to Hillary. And those are your sort of white male rural voters particularly.
David Hill, then look at the McCain side of this. His challenge is the other one, as you say, the conservatives who just can't go along with him because he's parted company in his maverick way on too many fronts. Is that surmountable, or is he going to be vulnerable to the last second in the primaries to a hard right challenger?
The key is going to be whether one of the other candidates, of which there are many right now, at least a half dozen, emerges as the champion or the favorite of the strongest conservatives in the party. So long as that conservative base is split among five or six candidates, they're simply going to have to kind of accept John McCain's ascendancy to the nomination. So the thing to keep an eye on is whether any one of the other candidates, bolts out of the tightly knit pack right now.
Do the troubles that the Bush administration is having all over the place and in the polls, do those help John McCain?
Well, I think to the extent that if you're a Republican and you feel like, boy, we need a fresh start, we need somebody who's totally new, John McCain's kind of irascible maverick style kind of represents a fresh start. I mean, there are other candidates out there, I think, that are outside of the Congress now that might represent that, someone like one of the governors, like Mitt Romney from Massachusetts, or Bill Owens from Colorado. These, Jeb would not represent that, obviously coming from the Bush family. But outside of that, that probably the best chance for a fresh start in the Republican Party would be John McCain. And so I think he's well-positioned with that kind of imprimatur stamped on him.
And David Hill, pick up the gender issue here, if you would. Hillary would be a big woman candidate. Here's John McCain. Imagine, if they're head-to-head, how do these two characters play off of each other? Is McCain vulnerable because she's a woman? Does he get angry and get seen as, you know, being angry with a woman? Or how do you see the gender issue playing out?
Well, you know, it's interesting. We've speculated for years about what would happen the first time we had a woman running for president. And I don't think that this was what anyone ever envisioned. They probably would envision a more traditional career path, not coming through the White House and being first lady.
Right.
So as such, I think that probably there won't be the kind of delicate handling issues. It will be okay for John McCain to be kind of irascible and rough with Hillary in discussions sometimes. I think, you know, we've had enough women politicians at the top levels engaging in the rough and tumble of politics, Nancy Pelosi certainly today, that people don't feel like they have to handle issues with kid gloves. And that's a good thing, because John McCain's not one to handle his opponent with kid gloves. I mean, when he's upset with his opponent, he'll let him know. And so it will be interesting to watch. The only other thing I would just interject to this about Hillary, a point that was made earlier that
yes.
I think is important, is I've been looking at a lot of the 1994 clips. I've been looking for the purpose, a lot of people are trying to draw analogies between 2006 and what's happening in 1994 in terms of a change of congressional leadership. And as I looked through the clips of that year, I saw a lot of Whitewater clips. It just sort of reminded me. And what was interesting about that was it seemed the way that it was sort of left was, is that it was not Bill's fault, it was Hillary's fault. Now, it may be the Senate race vetted all that, but I suspect that we're going to probably see the whole Whitewater thing revisited when Hillary tries to run in her own right for president. And I think, indeed, it's going to reawaken a lot of the ill will that from the very earliest days centered around Hillary. I think her focusing on health care is a big mistake for her, because the other divisive issue that she leaped into immediately was her Hillary health care plan. And so she's got to be very careful, because I think there is a lot of latent sleeping animosity for her that might be reawakened by her presidential candidacy.
Well, there's some old tar pits. We'll look at those. But Flavia Colgan, let me just put the pantsuit factor to you first. If it were McCain and Hillary, how do you see the gender issue playing out? Help, hurt, neutral?
Well, you know, it's always hard to say. I mean, I certainly think the country is ready for a woman. I just don't know if that woman is Hillary. And at poll numbers, I also think that you have to be a little skittish about that, too, because when people are asked, would you vote for a black candidate or would you vote for a female candidate, even people who are hesitant, a lot of them aren't going to feel comfortable telling a pollster, essentially, no, I'm not, because I'm a misogynist, or no, I'm not going to vote for black because I'm a bigot. So, you know, I mean, I'm from Philadelphia, for instance, and someone like a Frank Rizzo always ended up winning by 5 more points every election, because people didn't want to admit that they would vote for a guy like him. And I think you have a little bit of that working as well. You know, there's always, you know, things that you have to be careful for in a gender matchup in that way. I mean, you saw the debate against Lazio. I think probably one of the more pivotal moments in the campaign when Lazio came over to her lectern. You know, I think to me, when I saw that, that was the beginning of the end for him.
The finger in the face, and he looked too aggressive there.
Exactly. And for that moment, people, it softened her, and people empathized with her. And, you know, even those that didn't like her said, you know what, that guy still shouldn't be getting in her face. But, you know, getting back to the Hillary thing and the hard opinions people really do have on her, I really just don't feel she has much room for growth. And, you know, of course she could win. I mean, this is, I don't have a crystal ball, but to me, she would really only win in an Ohio or Florida type national election. And why do you want to take that risk?
What do you mean? You mean in an election that close, that squeaker?
In an election, exactly. In an election that close. And, you know, people say, oh, she's focusing on her election. She can't focus on having a position on Iraq. And, you know, make no mistake, I'm not on this program saying that, you know, I would vote for John McCain. I actually think the earlier caller had a very good point. You know, I find it interesting that the cognoscente or conservative leaders, you know, have put out this message that some Americans have picked up on that he's not a good conservative. I think regular conservative voters, when they take some time and look at a pro-life guy who, unlike Bush, you know, Bush doesn't seem to care about trade deficits, regular deficits, you know, cutting spending, anything really that the conservatives stand for. And so, one, I think the conservatives, in terms of voters, could really give McCain a fresh look. And two, you know, on Hillary, again, you know, you have to be very good to triangulate. And she ain't her husband. You know, that's all I can say. I mean, she's got great charisma in a small group. She's a very thorough speaker. She doesn't have that visceral ability to connect, that likability factor that Bill Clinton has. And as a progressive, and I look at her, you know, saying she's running against George Bush or she's going to run, it's not enough. There needs to be a 1-2 punch. Americans are proud and they have a lot of hope and they want vision and leadership. And leadership is not just running against something. Leadership is running for something. And as a Democrat, I very strongly believe in the values of the Democratic Party, and I find it, you know, offensive that Hillary Clinton feels she has tied her values or has to be on both sides of the issue.
So
I think that that's something that transcends any particular vote. That's a character problem, and that's a style problem. And, you know, the last thing I would say, and maybe I have a prejudice here because I worked for a governor, but, you know, I really feel that Democrats really want to win. I think that they do also want a fresh face. And I think that Americans in general tend to like executives, people who've created jobs or cut taxes or added more people to the health care role, and people who don't have complex, nuanced votes that they have to explain and then unexplain.
She doesn't rate on that scale. She looks strong and serious in the Senate, whatever else you might think of her.
Absolutely. I mean, she has done a very good job in the Senate, I think. And, you know, she won over a lot of people when she ran a tremendous race in the Senate. But, you know, we keep using New York as some kind of litmus test. I mean, let's be real.
And you're not sure it's executive image enough. Let's get a call from Arlington, Virginia. Veronica is on the air. Hi, Veronica.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, good.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm a Democrat who is tired of losing, and I'd like to win. But mainly I'm concerned about the fresh face factor. And it sounds as though what your panelists are discussing with Hillary Clinton and John McCain, it's just, it's the same old, same old. And I wanted to know what they thought of, you know, perhaps a Mark Warner candidacy or Mark Warner versus Rudy Giuliani or even a Susan Collins. Has she even thought about it? I mean, I'm a lifelong Democrat, but I've been extremely impressed with her.
So Collins in Maine, former Governor Warner in Virginia, Giuliani, let's bobble our heads around a little bit. David Hill, what do you say?
Well, I think there's a lot of interest in a fresh face, and that's where I think if it does come down to Hillary versus John McCain of those two is the fresher face to most Americans. But I think there will be some interest in both parties and some of these other candidates. I mean, deliver us from, you know, some of the recycles like Joe Biden or even John Edwards trying to make a comeback, and even on the Republican side, Newt Gingrich trying to get back in the game. I think what people really long for is, you know, a Chuck Hagel, a Mitt Romney, somebody who just says, like, we're going to have a fresh start here.
David's calling from Washington. Hi, David, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a great admirer of Hillary Clinton. I would vote for her as senator. I would vote for her enthusiastically as president. But I wonder if a democracy should elect as president the immediate family member of a recent president.
George W. Bush?
Completely lost in the Iraq war debate these days is a reason George W. Bush once gave for invading Iraq. He invaded, said George W., because Saddam tried to kill my daddy.
So what's Hillary going to do off the Clinton years?
Democracy should avoid dynasties. Hillary would continue the mistake. I'm concerned about that, and I wish your panel would address it.
Ryan, Lizza, does anybody talk about a dynasty factor here? I mean, why not? She is the wife of a former president who's still very much around.
Well, let me say two things. First of all, I don't think Bush said he invaded Iraq because Saddam tried to kill his father. Yeah. He did use the fact that Saddam tried to kill a former U.S. president as one piece of evidence against Saddam. I think the best argument against Hillary is the one that the caller makes, and that's this issue of political dynasties. And there's something that makes me uncomfortable about the Bushes and the Clintons switching off as president for
many years,
20 years. And I think that's going to be a major, major issue in any campaign. And I think there'll be a national conversation about that. And to me, it strikes me as one of the best, arguments against her.
But isn't Hillary going to point back to the 90s and say, remember that economy, remember that peace, remember the priorities we had there? We can have that all again with another President Clinton.
Sure, and other Democrats in the primaries who will bring up the dynasty issue, no doubt, will say, we can have it all without Hillary. Just vote for me, Mark Warner, or me, Evan Bayh, or Feingold, or whoever else.
David,
You get sort of Clintonism without the baggage, I think, will be the case that other people can make.
Yeah, how do you think that's going to play, David Hill, the sort of round two again here, first the Bushes, then the Clintons?
Well, I really don't. I've not come around to the point that necessarily all Bill Clinton fans are going to necessarily be Hillary fans. I mean, there's always been kind of a battle between Bill and Hillary, and people in the Democratic Party, I can remember taking sides when some of Bill's marital problems were coming to light. And so I wouldn't necessarily assume that every Bill Clinton admirer that thinks he was the guy most responsible for turning the American economy around would agree that Hillary is going to do the same for the economy. So I think she's got a big sell to some of Bill's biggest fans that she can deliver the same goods he did.
And John McCain, looking out right now on the political terrain as it's unfolding, how do you imagine he sees it, David Hill? It must look pretty good to him.
Yeah, John McCain's been kicking around America for quite a while now, kind of taking a gander at being president, and he's never achieved a lot of success. He had some strong primary runs, particularly in New Hampshire last time. But I suspect it's almost a little bit scary at this point. You try for something like this long, and it seems to keep eluding you, and all of a sudden it seems to be coming your way, and you might begin to wonder, well, when am I going to have to pinch myself to wake myself up from this dream? It looks good for him.
And if he pinches and it's not there for him, who do you see standing right behind, the strongest candidates after McCain?
Well, I don't know that there is one right now. I think that's what we're looking for. I think the number one thing that might even challenge McCain is going to challenge these others, and it's in our politics today, it's the toughest thing out there, and that's the money raising. You've got to raise, at some point here, we're getting into the range where you have to raise about at least $70,000 a week. That may not sound like much. The first couple of weeks are pretty easy. But then it gets a little harder and a little harder yet, and we talked about how there's over 1,000 days till our election, but those are going to be tough days for fundraisers. So we're going to have to see who after McCain and whether, in fact, McCain can raise enough to play this very, very expensive game. I'm convinced that Hillary's going to be able to raise the money. The Republican side, it's still to be seen.
And Ryan Lizza, just 10 seconds here. Who does Hillary's operation watch most closely? Who are they afraid of on the Democrat side?
I think one person they're really keeping their eye on is Al Gore, because he's the only other person that would get in the race and immediately be a giant. It would be a Hillary versus Gore race. Similarly, on the Republican side, the McCain people are watching Giuliani.
Wow, what a picture. Ryan Lizza at the New Republic, David Hill, Republican pollster in Houston, Texas, and Flavia Colgan, Democratic political consultant in L.A. Thanks to all of you for being with us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.